cloudy with a low in the upper 30s, and Saturday partly cloudy with a high in the mid 50s. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the mid 30s to 48 degrees at Rockford. Rockford reported sunshine at 48 degrees. At O'Hare, it was 37, Bloomington 36, Mattoon and Carbondale 40. At South Bend, light rain was reported, 36 degrees there at the top of the hour, 43 at Lafayette and Evansville, 41 at Indianapolis, 44 at Terre Haute. Willard Airport reported mist at the top of the hour, 41 degrees, the dew point 39, the wind out of the north at 13 miles per hour, the relative humidity 93%, and the barometric pressure 30.02 and falling. And at 12:38 Central Time, 40 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois, the sky is cloudy. Japan's domestic auto industry has ground to a halt following last week's massive earthquake and tsunami. Automakers have scaled back. Production and rolling blackouts could lead to shutdowns. NPR's Sonari Glinton reports shortages of parts produced in Japan could have an impact on the industry worldwide.
Often people talk about the U.S. car industry, the European car industry, or the Japanese car industry as if they were these wholly separate entities. Rebecca Lindland says that's just not the case. She's an analyst with IHS Automotive.
There is really just one industry these days. There's very few cars that are sourced completely from one region.
Lindland says the auto industry supply chain is increasingly global and fragile.
So even something as small as, say, an ashtray that is specifically designed for an individual vehicle, you could potentially see the production of the vehicles being affected.
Part of the automotive business is production and logistics management.
Michael McHale is with Subaru, which makes 55% of the vehicles it sells in the U.S. in the U.S. He says he's worried the Japanese disaster will have an almost immediate effect in dealer showrooms.
As it happens at Subaru, our stocks have been pretty low for a while. We've been selling very well the last couple of 3 years. So we're a little bit concerned going into this situation. Our stocks were low to begin with.
The analysts Rebecca Lindland and Subaru's Michael McHale both say the lack of Japanese parts could potentially stall car production and sales around the globe. Sonari Glinton, NPR News.
And the Mitsubishi plant in Normal, Illinois has enough parts to keep making cars for 2 more weeks, but officials are awaiting word on whether the earthquake and tsunami might disrupt production. A portion of the National Gallery in Washington, D.C. has the look of a tropical paradise, a major exhibition of works by 19th century post-impressionist Paul Gauguin includes oil paintings and other objects he created on the South Seas island of Tahiti. But the Tahiti the artist painted bore little resemblance to the real Tahiti, NPR's Susan Stamberg reports.
Work. I in Gauguin's shoes, what would I have to lose? I would embrace the muse and even thank her.
Edward Kleban, the lyricist of A Chorus Line, wrote this song about Gauguin.
And I would choose whatever Gauguin chose, and walk around in only Gauguin's clothes. And I would go wherever Gauguin goes. He was a banker.
Actually a stockbroker in Paris in the 1870s. Wife, 5 kids, started collecting art, then started making art, then rewrote his narrative.
By the early 1880s, he can no longer abide his life as a, you know, bourgeois gentleman, father, husband, and Sunday painter. He needs to be an artist.
He just flew into a rage and suddenly left his wife and his kids. Ding dong! For trouble in Tahiti, wasn't he a Shviti?
The paintings he made there, also wood carvings, ceramics, are full of bare-breasted Polynesian women, voluptuous, sensuous. National Gallery curator Mary Morton picks one from 1899 called simply Two Tahitian Women.
It could serve as a pinup in a tourist bureau for, you know, come to Tahiti, beautiful semi-naked women who will offer you flowers.
Gorgeous, but false. Gauguin hoped to find such lush and exotic creatures in Tahiti, but did not.
Tahiti, it was a French colony, had been thoroughly Christianized and colonized, and the women were not walking around half-naked or naked. They tended to be wearing these Christian missionary gowns.
Still, on his canvases, Gauguin took off their clothes and bared their undressed beauty.
This is Tahitian Eve. She's standing in the Garden of Eden. But because there aren't a lot of apples around in Tahiti, she is not plucking an apple from the Tree of Knowledge. She's plucking this exotic flower.
No slithering serpents there either. So instead, in that 1892 painting he calls The Delightful Land, Gauguin puts a lizard with flaming red wings next to Eve's ear. Now, think how many images artists have made of Eve over the centuries. In pretty much every one of them, she represents the Western beauty ideal of the day.
White, small waist, small little feet, polished skin, no body hair.
Very different from Gauguin's Eve. For one thing, the Tahitian Eve is a woman of color, and she's built differently.
Broad shoulders and strong legs, pubic hair. And then the most extraordinary thing about her is her feet.
They're big, and her left one has seven toes. That's how primitive she is, Gauguin seems to be saying, which was all too much, the figures too bizarre, the colors, his sunset oranges and fuchsias, all of it just too primitive for European tastes. When he brought 44 canvases back to a Paris gallery, only four of them sold. Today, Gauguin's go for tens of millions. I am a savage, Gauguin wrote, and civilized people suspect this. Know what? They were right to suspect him.
He's a liar. He's a real liar.
Curator Mary Morton says the great artist was no trustworthy reporter, no Margaret Mead examining an island and its people.
Gauguin, not an anthropologist. No, not scientific. He's using all of this as material for his own imaginative production.
The title of this National Gallery of Art show, it was organized by the Tate Modern in London, is Gauguin, Maker of Myth. And it is the myth in these works that is crucial here. The myth fabricated when Gauguin's dreams of paradise collided with Tahiti's harsh realities. That myth informs the body of his Tahitian creations.
This is one of the problems with Gauguin's work, is that, you know that he's making things up, but it's so seductive that you just have to reckon with it.
But what's so terrible about making things up? Don't all artists do that? Mm-hmm. They take something they see, mm-hmm. and they transform it into their vision of what they've seen.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I mean, this is something that we accept absolutely now.
But, says Mary Morton, here's the trouble. Gauguin said he was sending back true images of island life. Factual representations of a serene, sensual, primitive place. The French tourist industry was a kind of co-conspirator in this. They wanted tourists to travel to the Polynesian colonies. And so they, too, underscored these images of lush, seductive destinations.
There are postcards, they've got dancers, they've got exhibits. This stuff is mass marketed by the 1890s, and Gauguin, in a way, is participating in that.
All myths. And, like most myths, so powerful. They fed the fantasies of bored Europeans, longing for something exotic, just out there somewhere, waiting to be discovered. Paul Gauguin eventually got bored with his island life, fell ill, was poor. He wrote a friend that he was thinking of coming back to Paris. Don't, said the friend. You built your reputation as the exotic artist in exile at the edge of the earth. If you come back old and decrepit, you'll wreck it.
And so he doesn't, and he dies alone, sacrificing himself to this myth that he's constructed. And it's just heartbreaking.
Gauguin, maker of myth, is at the National Gallery of Art through early June, a moving, powerful show about a search for paradise and the revelations made for all of us in the course of that journey. In Washington, I'm Susan Stamberg, NPR News.
For more on the exhibition at the National Gallery, visit npr.org.
Earthquakes, fires, a tsunami, and a nuclear crisis. As Japan searches for the thousands of people still missing, NPR's reporters are there.
There's a huge billboard with all sorts of hand-scrawled notes on saying the names of people that they're looking for, saying, "We're safe, come and find us on the third floor."
The latest on the crisis in Japan, today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
You'll find thousands of used albums, plus CDs, videotapes, DVDs, and working stereo equipment at the 2011 Vintage Vinyl Sale, held on April 30th. We'll be at the new site, the former Altman's Billiard and Barstool Supply, located at 301 West Market View Drive in Champaign. Proceeds benefit the Illinois Radio Reader.
It's increasingly urgent that you contact your senators and representatives to let them know how you feel about federal funding for public broadcasting. If you have not or would like to reinforce your opinion, please call today. Find contact information at will.illinois.edu. Visit 170millionamericans.org to sign up to receive the latest information.
Writer's Almanac for Tuesday.